Ladies and gentlemen, a very good afternoon to you all. Welcome to Shivalik Bimetal Controls Limited Q3 and 9-month FY26 earnings webinar produced by Elevees. I'm Shankhini, Director of Investor Relations at Dickenson, and I'll be moderating our call today. So joining us from the management team, we have Mr. Sumer Ghumman, Whole-time Director, and Mr. Rajiv Ranjan, CFO. Please note that this conference is being recorded and that some statements in this call may be forward-looking based on current expectations and subject to risks that could cause results to differ materially. You can download the investor presentation and the press release from the company website or the NSE. Great. So I'll now hand the conference over to Sumer for some opening remarks. Over to you, Sumer.
Thank you, Shankhini. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Shivalik Bimetal Controls' quarterly earnings call for Q3 and 9 months ended 31st December 25. Overall revenue has grown by 9% year-on-year, both for the quarter as well as the nine-month period. Continuing the company's trend of improving profitability, EBITDA margin continues to grow disproportionately to sales, with the quarter closing with an EBITDA margin of over 24%, marking an increase of over 400 basis points year-on-year. Quarter 3 in general has been challenging for us, with unpredictability related to geopolitical factors, especially related to US tariffs. We generally experience reduced orders from our US-based customers during that time. We hope to see this trend reverse in the current and upcoming quarters. Our focus lies in strengthening our core business, and our priority is keeping our earnings growing. As you know, our core businesses operate in segments with high entry barriers, where customer approvals are hard won and relationships are built over years. Our aim is not to chase the broadest opportunity set. Our aim is to be indispensable in the programs we participate in through reliability, responsiveness, and consistent quality. Over time, this translates into deeper share of wallet, stickier relationships, and more stable demand through cycles. Secondly, we are moving up the value chain with discipline. To explain this further, as we scale, we want to improve value-added content per program and strengthen revenue visibility. Our forward integration journey is about participating in the parts of the value chain where precision engineering enjoys higher pricing because the customer's cost of failure is high. In that context, our board has just approved our plans to set up a new facility in Pune for the automotive bus bars and connectors and subsequent assembly business. This is a meaningful milestone and is designed to broaden our participation in e-mobility and energy storage applications, while staying true to what we do best, which is carrying out precision manufacturing at scale. We plan to launch this in 2026 itself with a proposed phased capacity addition from Q1 FY27 onwards. The 200 million rupee capex funding for this project will be managed through our internal accruals. Strategically, what this does is simple. It helps us become more relevant to customers with a wider solution envelope and improves the long-term quality of our growth. Thirdly, we aim to protect the quality of our earnings through optimal product mix, better discipline, and smarter capital allocation. This means that moving ahead, our growth must come from with improving economics. To demonstrate this principle, you would have noticed that this quarter's margin expansion was supported by a mix improvement and higher supplies of value-added components to some marquee global customers alongside cost discipline. This is the direction we want to keep reinforcing: better mix, tighter execution, and measured investments. At the same time, we remain thoughtful about shareholder returns. I'm pleased to inform you that the board has declared an interim dividend of 2 rupees per equity share. So if I were to summarize, we are building Shivalik for the next phase of growth with a steady hand, a stronger core, and a disciplined move into high-value assemblies, and a clear focus on improving the quality of earnings as we scale. Thank you.
Thanks, Sumer. We'll now begin with the Q&A session. So as a reminder, please raise your hand to join the question queue. Here's a quick reminder on how to raise your hand. If you're on desktop or laptop, look for the reactions button at the bottom of your Zoom window. Click on it, then select Raise Hand from the options. Your name will appear in the queue and I will call on you. If you're on mobile or tablet, tap on the More dot 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 button at the bottom right of your screen, then select Raise Hand from the menu. Perfect. So we'll start with the first question. The first question will be from the line of Dhruv Jain. Dhruv, your line is unmuted. You can go ahead and ask your question.
Thanks a lot. Hello, team. So a couple of questions from my side. So the first question, you know, if you could just give some clarity. Now, I know it's slightly early days, but given the tariff resolutions, any conversations that you've had with your, you know, customers from the shunt side in US and even the bimetal side as to if we should start, you know, seeing numbers really improve for the Americas quite materially going forward. Any thoughts there would be very helpful because we've seen that the, you know, that business has really suffered a lot over the last 1.5 years.
Right. So the answer to this is slightly different for both product types. You know, we supply almost in similar equal value, both thermostatic bimetal as well as shunts to the US. Now this temporary tariff disruption, you know, keeping that aside, of course, that matters. That makes a difference. What we experienced when it comes to tariffs in the last quarter was, you know, we didn't suffer any loss of business as such, but we saw a substantially reduced orders. And I'm sure everybody can understand that, you know, at that 50% tariff value, everybody was buying as minimum a quantity as possible or whatever minimum amount quantities that they needed. So we saw some product types suffer over there. Now, there has been a major benefit also to Shivalik because of these tariffs. What has happened is that a large portion of our US-based export of EB welded or shunt materials was in raw material form. That means we were welding strip and shipping large quantities of that to Vishay. Now, that because of these tariffs immediately put Vishay and us into action to move those into components. And why that is? Because that tariff is not just related to the tariffs that was placed on all general imports from India, but copper as well as stainless steel anyway attract a surcharge over its import. So even after this tariff gets reduced to 18%, if we continued to supply in strip form, it would have that business would have suffered. So what that has done as a result is quickly converted a lot of that strip business into parts, and we love that because that is much higher value add as compared. So what we expect to see, and the kind of businesses that we've already, the kind of part numbers that we're already supplying for the US market now is A, reduced now is going to be affected by lower tariffs. But B, it's a much higher value product. So we expect to actually see our US exports of shunts grow in the coming quarters. And when it comes to thermostatic bimetal, of course, that also some of our customers who were buying in strip form have completely, fast forwarded this transition into components. So in a way, other than this temporary hiccup of a quarter or so, we have actually seen that the tariffs have worked in our favor. So in order to answer your question, both shunts and thermostatic bimetals, we should see considerable improvement in what business we get from the US in this quarter and the coming quarters.
Sure. Mr. just another question on the bimetal side, right? So if you look at the bimetals business that you have from India, that number over the last, I'd say almost, 12 quarters has been more or less in that range. In fact, it's actually gone down lower. So if you could just share some time to help us understand why has that been the case and how should we think about the India business on the bimetal side, going forward, what are you trying to do here and how should possibly growth come back here? That's my second question.
See, when it comes to the Indian market, thermostatic bimetal is simply driven by market growth. So if you see in the last 4 years, as you mentioned, the general switchgear market has also had this sort of a flat kind of a performance. You may see in certain years it's been 5 or 6% or so, but it doesn't go 100% in line with the switchgear market because MCBs is the only product, mainly the real volume-based product where the thermostatic bimetal is. And so we have seen that generally, even though we see a lot of development happening, we've seen that generally switchgear market itself has had a bit of a flat situation. Now, when it comes to export, sure, export we have opportunities to convert and get more wallet share or to get more market share with a certain customer. And what we were targeting specifically in order to grow in those areas was for the US market. And those developments have been going on for more than a year and a half or 2 years, ever since we had confidently started our new capacities. Although, earlier last year, I would say, or earlier this financial year, when these tariffs and all started coming about, we noticed that generally the trend for new developments or the openness of our customers to develop new part numbers for thermostatic bimetal, specifically for the US market, took a hit. It sort of paused, and rightfully so, because, if tariffs are not clear, then there's a lot of cost, as you can imagine, a lot of cost involved in developing a new supplier or an existing supplier for a new location. So everything came to a halt, or everything slowed down when it came to development, as we mentioned before. So with more clarity on the tariff side, I think we should see some improvement in those areas. And really speaking, when it comes to bimetal, other than the market growth itself, there is limited opportunity for growth specifically for switchgear application. So the best way to grow in that area, what we are working on is we are looking at, certain other applications where these kind of bonding or these kind of joining processes we can utilize for certain applications. So a lot of those projects are in R&D, and we would like to utilize some of our capacities for that, so that we can get, we don't need to just rely on market growth or wallet share increase. So we are looking at some new opportunities in that area as well. So that is one way of growing, and the other one is, of course, like I said, trying to get more business share from the US, which we hope to see resuming now with more clarity on this.
Sure. And my final question is, on the new bus bar CapEx that you're doing. So, A, how should we think about the scalability of the same? And this, along with, the PCB assembly that you're trying to do, how should, FY27 look like? Like, we've seen a challenging year in terms of growth. So, with these new initiatives, if you could just throw some granular details as to how you're looking at FY27 overall from a growth perspective with various initiatives that you're trying to drive. Thank you so much, and all the best.
So, interestingly, some of the business opportunities that we've been working on for the last 7 8 months are related to these kind of assemblies. Some of them are already converting into orders. Some of them I've already converted, and business at low volumes has already begun. Which is why the decision to set up the facility in Pune initially we were going to supply the starting part of it from Solan, but why we decided to set this up in Pune, and we've identified the area where we are going to put this plant is a rented ready-to-use facility. So, and the reason behind that is that we have orders in hand which we have to supply from before, in fact, starting in March, and then really in larger volume starting in April. So, in order to be able to fulfill those orders, we need to have a facility ready and functional within this period of March. And so, the reason behind setting this up, first of all, in Pune, and the reason behind setting it up was that when we got deeper into it, we realized that the volumes are much larger than what we were initially told, and it is better that we are close to our customers there. So the four or five major projects that we are working on in this field are all based in and around that area. And from a growth point of view, what we expect to see that this CapEx that we are talking about should bring in this assembly business with four or five projects. Over a 3 year period, it could be in the range of 250 to 300 crores. with the first year, this 27 being about 70, 75 crores out of that. This is already developed. These components are already designed, developed, ready to move. So it's not something that's just a part of a plan. It's actual business that is starting. And so we let's say if 70, 75 or 80 crores of this business can be added in 27, then maybe about 150 to 200 in 28 and about 250 to 300 in 29. That's what we have in mind, and that's what that's the indication we have from our customers for whom we are developing this.
Thanks, Sumer, and thanks for your questions, Dhruv. Our next question will be from the line of Akash Vora. Akash, you can go ahead and unmute your line and ask your questions.
Thanks for the opportunity. And congrats for the good set of numbers. My first question will be on the new product that we have announced, that is the BuzzBar. So Sumer, I would like to understand mainly, more about the market, what kind of total addressable opportunity we have, who are our key competitors in this market, what this product is about, who's our, or who are the main customers or could be potential customers for us in this business. If you could just elaborate on that first.
Basically, like the way we manufacture these resistors by way of EB welding, there are certain busbar components that also require that welding. Now, we've got hold of this opportunity first is because multiple components used in this final subassembly require EB welding. And that becomes a no-brainer opportunity for us because, as you can imagine, wherever more and more EB welding is done, that's what makes that product most suitable for Shivalik. So the main target customer base for these products is two-wheeler EVs. Some four-wheeler EVs EV applications also require these kind of bus bars, but primarily it is for two-wheelers. And who we are targeting is all two-wheeler manufacturers in India for EVs, which we can foresee is expanding, and the interest of the consumer in buying EV two-wheelers is consistently increasing. Up until now, of course, whatever EV two-wheelers are being sold, usually these entire systems were being imported. So we didn't, there was no opportunity. With the recent shift of these manufacturers, the two-wheeler manufacturers pushing towards making these things in India, along with the ECMS push and PLI push and all of those things, a lot of the larger players want to develop these in India, and some of them are absolutely new models or new products being launched. Now, because of NDA reasons, I can't specifically mention which final users are these, but I can tell you that they are the two EV projects that we are working on right now for two wheelers, which we are closest to supplying, are both number one and number two of when it comes to EV when it comes to two wheeler manufacturing in India, not just EVs, but as a whole, the two largest are the ones that we are working with. And there are many others in the pipeline, but these are the the ones. So there is, as of now, there is no competition because nobody does this EB welding. Nobody now, unless somebody makes this entire complicated assembly somewhere else in the world and then ships it to India, which I highly doubt, because that's primarily the reason why this is being shipped to India. So as of now, there is no competition unless somebody sets up something to be able to do this. So this is actually a very good product for us because it's not just an assembly which requires one or two of our components, but more than a very large percentage, which varies from customer to customer, but a very large percentage of value add as well as the technology part of it comes from Shivalik, and it's not just simple bought out component.
Understood. And since since this is a kind of a forward integration for us, so our margins should be better here, should I assume?
As a percentage, maybe it should be about 10% lesser, maybe 8 or 9% lesser EBITDA. But of course, the top line value is more than 15 times or so of the component alone. Well, if I include the other EB welding, so let's say about 10 times more than that value. Yeah, I mean, so this is not really a new thing for us. I mean, we are now formally announcing it as a new unit because now business is starting. But I don't know if you've been following the previous discussions and calls and the information we've been putting out. These are projects that we've been working on over the last 12 months. So the margin does come down as a percentage, but as a whole, because the top line value goes up, so even with a 10% reduced or on the higher side, even a 10% reduced EBITDA, the main thing about this business is that since it's technically very related to our EB welding as well as our resistors, it's a very sustainable margin. So it's not something that we'll see eroding over time.
Yeah, I
Fair
like
enough. And I'll...
Akash.
Please. Yeah,
Yeah,
please.
to your question. So for this product line, yes, it's compared to our current organic products, a less margin. But overall, if you see the company's margin, it will not impact our EBITDA anymore.
Okay. And how will you all offset the decrease in this, the margins in this product? I mean,
Due
just
to
want to
volume,
understand.
due to volume, yeah.
And the competition currently, Sumer, is only global, right? No Indian competitor in
No.
this
So
product.
first for somebody to truly be an Indian competitor, first they'll have to start EB welding and start making these resistors. That is the most important aspect. So as of now, we don't have anybody who we at least know of, or is at least we have information on. So no, as of now, no.
So how many bus bars will be going in a two-wheeler? I mean, any, so that we can kind of size or, get some sense of the scale of the opportunity that we have.
Right, so I think it varies a lot from design to design, but to give you a simpler answer to this, I would say that this kind of an assembly for let's say a high value design, let's say a design in which there's more number of bus bars and more number of more welding or more material required, would be the value of that product overall would be about 22,000 to 3,000 rupees. And roughly about 62 or 60 or two, between 60 to 65% of that would be material cost.
Okay, and per vehicle it'll be only one bus bar, is it?
No, it'll be
For
multiple. It depends on various designs. Some designs actually don't have any bus bars. So it depends on. So two-wheelers in most cases have bus bars, but then again, certain two-wheelers don't. So it varies from design to design, but the two major projects that we are working on have four different components of different types of EB welding involved inside the whole assembly.
So on an average, any number you could give us?
No, in terms of the value, or is it
The units per vehicle, the content per vehicle.
So, see, let me answer this
In
question then.
variable.
Yeah, as for the design of the battery, Akash, so it entirely depends on the design of the battery, and based on which maybe the requirement can start from four in a battery set, maybe it will increase to six to eight. So it entirely
Actually,
depends on the battery
it's very
design.
difficult to put an average there. So, each design can vary a lot. So that's why I think it's a better way to look at it is an average value, because that gives you a better picture. Because components can vary in size. There could be a 5 of a 10 rupee component, and there could be 4 of a 100 rupee component. So it's just too many variables there.
Understood. So average value add per vehicle or content per vehicle can be considered as 2,000 to 3,000, which you mentioned.
That's correct. So that is a better way to look at it, because 2,000 to 3,000 is the value with a 60 to 65% material cost. And
Understood.
one could say that in this 2,000 to 3,000, if we were only supplying components and not putting together this assembly, those components could have varied from, let's say, 100, 120 rupees to 300 or 400 rupees. So that is actually the right way to look at it. Besides, we would have never had the opportunity to supply those 300 or 400 rupee components, because that assembly would have been manufactured wherever the final product was being manufactured, which up until now was being imported.
Thanks, Sumer and Rajiv, and thanks, Akash, for your questions. You can raise your hand again and we can take some more follow-ups in a little while. Our next question will be from the line of Nirmam Mehta. Nirmam, you can go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your questions.
Hi. So again, my question is on the US business. So tariff was one challenge and we were also facing some issues with Vishay. But now with those issues behind us from your commentary, what is the kind of growth you expect from the US business for the next year? I mean, you mentioned some, it would improve, but what if you could, quantify something? And are there any other challenges also that we face in the US?
Right. So, the one big challenge that we faced in the US was more related to one customer, as you rightly mentioned. A part of their business or the part of their design had recently also gotten phased out. So that also had a contribution to in this reduction. Now, what Vishay has recently done is that they've developed certain components for this application for the largest global EV manufacturers in the world, both the top one and top two. And that business we are already getting now. It's part of our revenue at this point. And so we are basically now supplying to, or we have restarted business with Vishay to a point. We expect that in this, partly in this quarter, as well as if you look at next year, which is 27, Vishay business value coming back to similar levels to what it used to be during its peak. So that business has already begun, and that business is already we've already got orders. So we foresee we see a good future when it comes to the US export. I think there's so much noise in your background.
Nirmal, I request you to mute your audio while Sumer is answering. Yeah, Sumer, you can continue, please.
Right. So with that business added, we feel confident that the what was looking what was going showing as a sort of a negative for us, as say as far as US exports are concerned, it should have an opposite effect now. So Vishay should go back to its levels of what it used to be 2 to 3 years ago, and we'll start seeing those seeing that difference within, even this quarter and the quarter after, because that business is already in regular supplies now. And that's all components, by the way. So, that's a major advantage. What I had mentioned in the, during the, while I answered the first question today, these are all components. And so they're much higher value add, which also brings us to a point that this trend of increasing profitability, we should continue to see, because the few businesses that are adding to revenue as we speak are on the higher margin side.
Correct. And you also see these product developments that, were paused because of the tariffs to resume, and, we could add more product.
That's right. And that thing has the biggest plus point for thermostatic bimetal, because, as I had mentioned in the last question, that our real growth for bimetal actually can come from the US market. I mean, because we already have a decent footprint in Europe and Asia. We can't target China for obvious reasons. Some of the other markets in the world are serviced by these areas. They don't manufacture too much of this themselves. So where we can really get business. This switchgear market is controlled by five or six large players who are already our customers. There is no major switchgear manufacturer for that uses thermostatic bimetal and is not already buying from us. So, we already have those customers. It's just that we wanted a higher market share in the US, and that development is what got stalled. What we are also considering, and not just because of tariffs, what we are also considering is to see if we can have a facility or tie up with a partner to have a small final packaging or a final storage area in the US, because sometimes we feel that we can providing that additional service to a US based customer can help us do more business there. But again, like I said, with all these tariffs and all this uncertainty, everything had come to a standstill. Now we are in the process of, once more clarity in maybe next month, more clarity comes out in this, we can restart dialogue with our customers related to this.
Got it. And so again, on the margins, you mentioned that these look to be sustainable, and I mean commendable job on the margins. So you expect a similar range next year, or we can still see some improvement over these kind of numbers?
That's what the idea is. Now, unless we add lots and lots of revenue from lower margin business, that's a different thing. That's if you keep that aside, our core businesses, yes, we are working, all of our decision making is now on the basis of how to sustain or improve profitability. And when we also know that the operating leverage that we get beyond a certain level, specifically in shunts, our business in the last 12 or 18 months had gone below that sweet spot level. And the moment it comes back, then we see margins shooting up considerably. So we know that once we stay over a certain amount of revenue from the shunts, and that's going to happen. Why? Because one example that I gave of this strip business to the US turning into parts, that not only increases top line value but also increases bottom line value further. So, that multiplier effect of the profitability is something we'll see even more clearly as that business grows. And that business has just started, like it's been only 2 months. And the first month was, again, because of tariffs, even those quantities were a little bit, on the lower side. Everybody has been ordering on the negative tolerance rather than on the higher side. Again, hopefully that'll be fixed soon.
Just one last clarification. So you mentioned about the busbar and the forward integrations. So you also mentioned some PCB assemblies that were to start in Q4. So is it a part of the busbar and
Technically, they fall in the same category, but those opportunities were different from this, and those are also under development. So that business is also happening as on the side. Those are basically the same things without the busbar assembly. So certain applications don't require busbar assembly. So those are for those, and that's under development also.
So the
And
two,
sorry.
the 250, 300 crore number you mentioned, it includes both of the all of these forward integrations.
It includes, yes, all of the assemblies, the various different types, out of which a vast majority of the value comes from the busbar related assemblies, because those are the most high value ones. In some four-wheeler applications, like I mentioned, in two-wheelers, the assembly value can be 2 to 3,000 rupees. In four-wheelers, it can be more than 5,000 in some cases. So that's also a part of development happening as of now.
Thanks, Sumer, and thanks for your questions, Nirma. You can raise your hand again, and I can put you into the follow-up queue as well. Our next question will be from the line of Soham Dengra. Soham, you can go ahead and unmute your line and ask your questions, please.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, please proceed.
Congratulations on a great set of numbers this quarter. I had a couple of questions. So, with respect to the busbar business that you're developing, I wanted to understand what is our moat or a barrier to entry in this space. Is it a long regulatory approval process, or is it a purely pricing standpoint? And we are doing EB welded busbars, and I was reading up somewhere that this is a much more efficient process to manufacture these busbars compared to other traditional mechanical methods. So can you just throw some light on the efficiencies that we see when we use this EB welding method compared to other methods?
Yeah, so specifically when we talk about assemblies related to these EB welded busbars, of course, the biggest barrier to entry is the EB welding itself. Now, if EB welding, like I was mentioning earlier, EB welding is not something, in strip EB welding is not something that's done by too many manufacturers across the world. In India, nobody else does it. Now, having said that, doesn't mean that it's not possible for somebody else to do it or they can't get into it. But we do have a major advantage when it comes to the technical know-how of EB welding. And the reason is that we have been involved in EB welding for more than nearly
30 plus years or so, because we used to do that for, we used to make EB welded components for the color picture tube industry in the mid 90s. So we do have an advantage and of technical know-how. So even if a new entrant or a new player came in, we will certainly have more technical. So that becomes basically the barrier to entry in this business. Of course, as you mentioned, just like normal resistors or just like even normal copper components used in, let's say, energy meters, why are EB welded shunts used in the first place? Is because the welding is so efficiently done that it does not affect the flow of current. That's the basic principle. When you weld two different materials, two different conductive materials, and the weld is not good, or the weld has too many gaps, or it's changing the properties of that point where the weld has taken place, it will have an impact on the flow of current. Now, EB welding has minimal impact on that and yet provides a strong joint. So, which means the current flow happens without damaging that area. And that is the basic principle. Now, of course, when that happens, you are able to join two different materials, make use of their different differences in resistance, and as a result, get accuracy in the measuring the flow of current. And of course, then that same thing applies to bus bars as well, as it does to a resistor or it does to any other EB welded component or application. So it's, answer is very simple. It's just a complicated process to do.
Okay. Another question I had was, last time you had mentioned that you were entering certain new product verticals in the electronics application space. So can you tell us if there's been any progress on the front, or just throw some light on which products are we planning to expand in and which areas do they fall in and what's our moats over there?
Right. So we are looking at, there are certain types of automotive fuses that we are working on, and we are working with the possibility of looking at getting this technology from another company, a foreign company, or maybe even look at the possibility. We are open to the idea of, acquiring that technology or the company. But we are looking at various different types of components in the automotive fuse space. Why that is connected to us? Obviously, a lot of the resistors that we're making are also used for automotive applications. But these fuses are a very different type. They are not the typical commodity type fuses that you see in automobiles. These are used in separate applications. Like, for example, it's used in the power window assembly or the tailgate assembly. And those little fuses that are used are basically, two types of copper or two stripes of copper with a different material in between that melts, that has a lower melting point. So when that component is overheated, that lower melting point material just melts and breaks open that joint, and hence the fuse has protected or done its job by stopping the flow of current. So what we are trying to work on is various applications like that to see if we can, incorporate EB welding there. And the results are good. So that is, of course, one area we are working on because it's also related to what we have. We are, alongside that, we are looking at, certain other components that fall into our, some kind of, it's complementary in nature in some way or the other. We are looking at certain automotive inductors that, we're still assessing the business, the market. Alongside that, we have a few more opportunities which we have to go further into at this point, but we are analyzing them. But these are some of the other ones that we've gone deeper into.
Okay, a final question that I had was on the PCB assembly front. The recent PLI schemes that have come out for these PCB components, how do you think Shivalik might benefit from these schemes? And can you quantify the sort of tailwinds that you see due to these schemes?
Yeah, I think Rajiv, PLI, I think you would be able to.
Yeah, so see, the PLI has now been converted into a CMS scheme from the central government, where we have already applied, put our application, which is under examination, and very soon, hopefully, we will get the approval from the government. Since we have already availed in the past for 4 years under PLI, And as far as the quantification is concerned, entirely depends on the revenue. As we mentioned, that it has a potential to grow in between 250 to 300 crore. So accordingly, we will get the ACMS grant from the government.
Thanks, Sumer and Rajiv, and thanks to Soham for your questions. You can raise your hand again to join the follow-up queue. Our next line of questions will be from Bhargav Buddhadev. Bhargav, you can go ahead and unmute your line and ask your questions, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, team, and congratulations on the good set of numbers. My first question is just wanted to have some clarification that you mentioned this 250 crore revenue on a 20 crore CapEx. So is the math clear? I mean, because this seems like a very high asset turn.
Yeah, so no, Bhargav, this is not probably the right way to look at it, and probably doesn't sound okay. You are absolutely right in identifying that. You see, the more costly CapEx requirement for being able to do something like this is something we already have, and we already have further invested over the
No.
last few years into that capacity as well as capability. So now this 20 crores is actually more of assembly work and having an assembly line, and that's why we can set it up very quickly, because a lot of our main key processes equipment cannot be set up that quickly. So this is more related to that. In fact, I would say a large portion of this 20 crores is more related to actually having the plant in place. That cost is probably the most.
No.
Assemblies, so the most cost, the most expensive CapEx involved in being able to do this is the welding and all the processes before and after the welding. All that we already have. So one can say that in a way this is like incremental CapEx for being able to do this additional forward integration.
And is it fair to say that you mentioned 75 crores revenue next year and in 3 years 250 crores? So for that, the current assembly plant in Pune, can it cater to that 250 crores or you need more CapEx to
No,
reach there?
it should be able to what we have in hand, but we also are looking at if we can find certain we in the previous question we were talking about certain other electronics opportunities that we are also exploring, which are some are related, some are not. If we can club everything together and add it onto the plant in Pune instead of spreading into another third location. What we had in mind, because of the better ecosystem for electronics over there compared to, let's say, Solan, if we can add all of those things, then maybe in year two, while we are running this various assembly businesses out of there, maybe we can set up a new facility and add those other things as well. So that part we've left open, depending on all the other opportunities and how they pan out and whether it makes sense for us to have them geographically in that region.
Secondly, sir, now that the US tariff is likely to reduce post-March, is it fair to say that you will again not shift back to exporting strips versus components? That's a fair understanding, right?
No, we can't export. See, what happens is when it comes to thermostatic bimetal, even when it comes to copper, both if the moment we supply strip, they fall in the stainless steel or the copper category.
Sure.
Those have a tariff of 50% as it
Yeah,
is
Section 232.
232. So if we don't supply components, strip is out of question anyway.
Sure.
So
Okay.
that's why I was saying earlier that in a way it's actually worked well for us. Wherever we had the opportunity to convert to components or start that development, that has happened faster, or at least started faster.
And this rest of Asia, which was increasing, is it fair to say that rest of Asia increase was on account of US tariff, and now that tariff has reduced, the rest of Asia growth may come off and US growth may increase? Is that understanding correct or?
I don't see there's no connection. We'll see an increase or restoration of the US business hopefully, but the Asian market will behave on its own. It's not related, in our case at least, for our products it's not related.
Okay. So it wasn't the case that instead of exporting to US, you were exporting to Asia on the calling of Vishay telling you to do that. It wasn't
no,
that.
No, 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 no. You're right. So no, that was a different. That was a. There's a different idea behind that. Now, Vishay, with Vishay, we also have a white label agreement to supply directly to some of its customers. That development was already happening before the tariffs. So okay. The decision behind that was more logistic related rather than tariffs. Now, tariffs actually accelerated that development. So what was supposed to happen in a 18-month period got, you know, that sped up and it became faster, the developments, because now nobody, since that was anyway being, you know, planned to be sent directly to a customer, then why bring it to the US and pay this 50%? So those developments actually became much faster as a result. So this part of the plan of this white label agreement was before the tariffs, before the even the initial tariff idea was, you know, it came around. Even before that, it had started.
Thanks, Sumer, and thanks for your questions, Bhargav. You can keep your hand raised for the follow up queue. Our next line of questions will be from the line of Nikhil Poptani. Nikhil, you can go ahead and unmute your line and ask your questions, please.
Yeah. Am I audible?
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers after many muted quarters. So, as we are seeing, prior to the disruption of the tariffs, we were guiding towards 12 to 15% of the period. Now the somewhat of the tariff disruption is coming down. So, are we looking at FY27 again as a 12 to 15% growth? And as we are forward integrating and we are going to this. So we can assume that our volumes will come down a little bit, but our price realization will go up. So how much would be contribution from the volume side in growth, in our revenue growth, and how much will be the realization growth in perspective to revenue?
I think Rajiv, if you can.
Okay. So, what I understand, because maybe a bit connection problem from here, their side. So, regarding the volume and value growth in context of US market, if you see, since we are converting a strip into components, it's very hard to say or count compared with the previous numbers, because realization will be more due to supply in component form. Yes, the growth in volume side for both the product will be there, along with the realization will be more in context of value growth. So hypothetically, if we are growing 5% in volume growth, then there will be at least 12 to 15% in realization form growth.
Yeah. That's good for understanding. And my first question on guidance, like prior to our first tariff disruption, we were guiding towards 12 to 15% of growth. So now going forward, let's say in FY27, FY28, are we reiterating that guidance? Because now a lot of the headwinds have come off.
Yeah, of course. So before that, for the whole year, our guidance was in between 10 to 12%. Somehow, due to this tariffs and the geopolitical issue, we are around 9% as of now, which is near to 10%. Somehow, we are maintaining our commitment to the market. And here on, we are estimating it should be at least better than whatever we have delivered so far in 9 months.
Thank you. All the very best.
Thanks for your questions, Nikhil. And thanks for your answers, Rajiv and Sumer. Our next line of questions will be from the line of Naushad Chaudhary. Naushad, you can go ahead and unmute your line and ask your questions, please. We'll move on to the next participant. Our next line of questions will be from the line of Bhavesh Jain. Bhavesh, you can unmute your line and ask your questions, please. Looks like we'll move on to the next participant. Our next line of questions will be from the line of Heth Shah. Heath, you can unmute yourself and go ahead and ask your questions, please.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. A couple of questions from my side, more likely confirmative ones. Firstly, we've given volume growth guidance of about 4 to 5% for the year. This 9 months, we are already 3% down. So, I mean, would we be able to achieve some bit of it? And secondly, if you could quantify the share of components versus parts in the revenue mix for this particular quarter, vis-à-vis the previous one and Q3 FY25. And lastly, just wanted a confirmation of what you said in this call and the previous call. So, PCB assembly's revenue for FY27, you said close to about 50-55 odd CR. This particular con call, you said busbar plus PCB would, the total forward integration would be at about 70-75 CR for FY27. And EBITDA margins for PCB, you've said it could go maximum to 17-18% on the lower side. And busbar, you've said it would be probably 10% lower than what is the normal margin. So that would be at about 12-13%. So is my understanding correct? Yeah, I'm done with my question.
Yeah, so as far as the total volume versus value is concerned, if you see in the 9 month, the total volume has grown by 3% compared to the previous 9 month. And even quarter on quarter, you can see, or product wise, you can see the shunt has grown by almost 9.5%, whereas bimetal has grown by 5% in volume term. So we have seen a committed growth, which was estimated initially in the beginning of the year to grow in the range of 10-12%, and somehow we have achieved in the range of 9%. If you, the second question was regarding your component and strip. So currently we are supplying as a company around 36-37% in a strip form and rest in the component form overall. And third was your question regarding to maintain the EBITDA margin. Currently, we are in the range of 23-26%. And after forward integrated product, since the product will give a lower EBITDA compared to the current organic product, but overall, the company's EBITDA will be in the range of 23-25%. As we will grow in volume terms for the assembly business. And in fact, if you see the incremental cost will be lower than what we can maintain at least at EBITDA level. So overall, the company's EBITDA would be in the range of 23-25%.
Got it, sir. Fine. That's helpful.
Thanks for your questions, Heath. Our next line of questions will be from the follow-up queue. So, Akash, you can go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your follow-up question.
Actually, I was just going through the presentation. I had a look on our net working capital days, which have grown as high as almost from 250 to 60 days. I just wanted to understand, what measures are we taking on that front, to bring it to a more controllable kind of a number? Because 250, 260 net working capital days is like too high.
Yeah, so in this quarter, you see, sometimes when you're ordering, then you are getting material in time. So this quarter, the consignment should land in January, has already landed in December. Due to his, there is a certain increase in inventory days. And parallelly, since we are growing around 9% in revenue based on which our collection period has increased almost by 10 days. So it is under 90 days, but it still has increased compared to the previous 9 months. So as far as the corrective action is concerned, for raw material side, we are in the process of developing three or four domestic supplier, which will eventually reduce a certain days, not the complete, maybe under 180 days or 200 days. On the other side, I'm also taking some precautions for the collections from customer, where we are having some tripartite agreement with the financial institution to get the upfront payment, where we are exceeding above on and above 90 days payment term. So these are the two measures we are considering, due and based on which at the quarter ended March 26, we'll be able to get this working capital in the range of the previous year's numbers.
Understood.
Thanks for your follow-up, Akash. Our next line of questions will be from the line of Richa Agarwal. Richa, you can go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question, please.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congratulations for a good set of numbers. So I just wanted to know that, we are hearing a lot of, like traction in the data center segment, which, in your presentation, you mentioned as one of the areas for end applications. So if you could talk a bit of, what kind of opportunities, if at all, you are seeing emerging, and also, the breakup of your revenue, end sector-wise, like how much is going towards smart meters or EVs, if you have that.
I think, see, with data centers, sometimes it's very difficult for us to analyze what exactly. So, starting with, let's say, EVs or smart meters are very custom made to the specific application. So it's easy for us to classify that as the end application. When it comes to data centers and the general increase in demand for these products, including even thermostatic bimetal because of increase in demand for switchgear, we don't know, because there are some general application energy storage devices as well as some general application switchgear which are both being utilized for this. So it's very difficult for us to specify, because it's not a unique design to its application. But yes, when it comes to smart meters and when it comes to automotive resistors, that we know. So I think that exact breakup, if Rajiv, if you can just break up the revenue that we have from energy meters as well as from automotive shunts as well as from non-automotive shunts.
So in broader category, for both the product, thermostatic bimetal and shunt, so in thermostatic bimetal, switchgear industry constitutes around 80% of our supplies. The rest is between automotive, energy meters, and some home appliances. Similarly, in register business, around 60% goes to automotive and 35% goes to energy meters. The rest is in between home appliances, gas meters, and others.
Thanks for your question, Richa. Our next line of question will be from the line of Pratik Chaudhary. Pratik, you can unmute yourself and go ahead and ask your question.
Sir, ex of the assembly business, what sort of growth can we possibly see in our base manufacturing business in FY27? A rough range would be helpful.
So Pratik, we basically, what thermostatic bimetal, like I had mentioned earlier, it's a little bit difficult for us to say at this time because there were too many things related to the US market. We do expect, we have an indication from our customers for India and certain other markets that we do expect to see, like a 8 to 10% kind of a growth in that area. But where we are really expecting growth in our baseline business, unrelated to any forward integration or new product types. We do expect to see a much larger growth in the shunt business because, like I mentioned, Vishay being one of them, and there are two, three other customers, including Denso from Japan, and there are three or four other Japanese customers as well, where business is already commercial business has already begun. In some cases, it's been a few months. In some cases, it's starting now or maybe next quarter. So when we add all of that, we hope and we expect that if all of those things work well and those businesses as per the forecast that we have, we should be able to add to our shunt baseline business anywhere between 13, 14 to 18, 19% kind of a number. So that expectation is what we are working with, and that's the kind of indication we have from these new developments.
Great. Thanks a lot, sir.
Thanks for your question, Prateek, and thanks for your answer, Sumer. Our last follow-up question will be from the line of Bhargav Buddhadev. Bhargav, you can unmute yourself and go ahead and ask your follow-up question.
Yeah, hi. So just one follow-up question. So, sir, when you mentioned that 65% is raw material cost in that automotive bus bar, I would presume that would be coming from the mother factory, right?
Some part of it, yes. Because some part will be other components as well. And some portion of it would be our own components that we have manufactured. So, but we are taking that as a whole value.
And lastly, any impact of this raw material inflation that we are seeing across your key raw materials, or we will be able to pass it on?
Our pricing structure is such that all of the raw material pricing is passed through because, it can go either ways. Right now it's seen an upswing, but it can go downwards as well. The bigger impact that we've had is in our third product vertical, which is silver contacts. And silver contacts had more exposure in recent months because, you may be aware that for that particular business, we are, in the process of moving to a new factory. That factory is already partially under production. But because it was running on full capacity, it's a complicated process to move to a new location. So we had, we had more inventory, slightly more inventory lying with us, and we had more exposure because of this transit. And that's exactly the time when silver actually, went a little bit too high. So we do have certain instances where this can have an impact, but under most circumstances, it has no impact directly on our margins as well as our. Surely there'll be some increase in top line that will show up as a result of that.
Thanks, Sumer, and thanks for your questions, Bhargav. I can see some more participants in the queue. I'd request you to write to us at Dickinson with your questions and we can get them answered to your satisfaction. I'll now hand over to Sumer for closing remarks.
So thank you everybody for joining us today. The key takeaway is that we are growing steadily while improving the quality of earnings. And we remain focused on strengthening the core and moving up the value chain in a measured way, with the Pune initiative being a clear step in that direction. Thank you for being a part of Shivalik's growth journey as we enter this next phase. Wishing you all a pleasant evening ahead.
Thanks, Sumer, and thanks, Rajiv, and thanks to all our participants today. Thank you.
Bye.
Please do write to us if you have any further questions or would like to engage with the management. We'll be happy to set that up. We can now disconnect our lines. Thank you for joining us on behalf of Shivalik Bimetals Controls Limited. Cheers and good evening.